You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have a real treat today. We are going to hear from Jeff Irvin, the founder and CEO of Spinitar. And Jeff started this company himself, and we want to hear about how he got started and what were the obstacles he had to overcome. And then we'll talk a little bit more about how he sees business today in California. So welcome, Jeff. Welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405.
Thanks, Will. It's good to be here. It was back in May of 1986 that I actually founded the company. So I've been doing this now for about 32 years, so a good long time. My background prior to that, I went to school at Arizona State. Upon graduation, went to work for a company by the name of Croy that was a early manufacturer of lettering and labeling systems. I worked for them for about 5 years. They decided to either sell or close all their direct sales offices around the country and go back to an indirect means of distributing their product. And that actually provided the opportunity for me to put my name in the hat to acquire the Croy branch office that was here in Southern California at the time.
Wow.
And I did that at the ripe old age of, 26. So I was young. And it was an interesting time too, because no California banks would finance me, would loan us any money to get into business, even though I could show them financials from the prior business and its performance. If you didn't have dollar for dollar equity in California real estate, they weren't going to provide you any loans. So luckily I had an uncle back in Illinois that was a banker, and he trusted and in what we were doing. And we started the business on May 26, 1986 with 11 people. And it was a bit scary. I remember that first day like it was yesterday, that driving to work that morning thinking, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? But fortunately, it all worked out. We were able to grow the business from 11 people to, we have about 150 folks today. Back then, we were a pretty simple company, just peddling, you know, rudimentary audiovisual gear. So lettering and labeling systems that would create original type and content for overhead transparency presentations, slide presentations, proposal covers, that type of thing. Migrated the company from being a provider of technology to an integrator of technology as we progressed from LCD panels to LCD projectors. And then began to build in the late 90s an integration practice or a services practice, because it was pretty clear and evident that we needed to not just be a provider of technology, but needed to be a services provider, an integrator of technology, and get more revenue from services and less from just peddling a box. And so back then it was primarily projectors.
Why did you do that? Why did you think that was necessary?
Well, we saw margins eroding probably about 2 percentage points every year. And primarily the hub of what we were selling were LCD projectors at the time. And back in the good old days, we could go out, demonstrate a projector, customer would buy one or 20 or whatever, and we would make good, fair margin. But every year, kind of year over year, we saw margins eroding about 2 percentage points. You know, catalogers, superstores, you know, the mass merchandisers, the internet people, the internet players got involved. The Japanese got involved in the industry big time, and it was their objective to make sure that the product was available in any which way the consumer was going to fathom to buy the product. So that compressed margins, and it was really, I likened our business to the computer business. It was kind of like how many mom and pop computer resellers were still around today or at that time, and felt like the same impact was going to happen on the AV business, and we were going to need to become much more of a services-focused company or potentially not survive. So it was really a survival strategy.
Well, I had a client who had a similar experience with IBM. I mean, he really could show me on the board what was going on with the margins that he was getting for his servers and all of the equipment, all the products.
Right.
And he really did have to move into providing services in order to increase his margins.
Yeah, and it was not easy. I mean, it was difficult to really take a transactional sales organization and migrate them to being a more of a solutions services focused sales organization. Some made the cut and some just didn't make the transition at all. And quite frankly, too, I was a sales and marketing guy that was good at, you know, peddling boxes of technology, but I didn't really know the integration kind of contractor part of our business today. So I was able to bring in a business partner still today, Jay Regina, who joined the company in 1999 as a partner in the business to really build our services practice. And really today, I mean, largely that's what we're known for, is really our integration business, and that the transactional business has virtually gone away.
Well, would you say that, I mean, we know that varieties of channels now are, given the access they have to global markets, they're willing to take a much smaller margin because they have a larger number, larger quantity that they can move.
Right.
So now would you say that the real need that people have then, a company using video conferencing, the real need they have is to understand how to use it, how to make the most of it, how to eliminate problems, where the support is for being able to do the kinds of things they want to do.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge part of it. And interestingly enough, Will, it took us quite some time to figure that out. We go out and we design and build and support, from a service standpoint, high performance work and learning spaces for our customers. You know, whether it's a boardroom, conference room, training room, classroom, huddle space, command and control facility, emergency operations center, city council chamber, church sanctuary, whatever, that's what we do. But one thing we kind of realized a year or so ago is that we had really not done a great job of educating the customer how to get the most return on the investment and get the most impact from the use of those spaces. And so we have now launched a training services option and package for our customer. So all stakeholders that go in to use those spaces that are technology equipped are now much better trained and educated on how to use those rooms, so they get the best return on that technology investment. And I think that's huge. I think that is so, so important. And unfortunately, it took us a long time to figure that out, that there was really a need to be able to provide that to our customers, because at the end of the day, some of the stuff is not as simple as it should be.
Well, and to me, it seems to me that if we focus on how do we increase our margins, that can be complicated. You come up with a variety of ways to increase margins. If we were to focus on what are the needs, what are the problems that our prospects or customers, current clients, want to solve that they're not solving right now?
Absolutely. I mean, it's all about outcomes, right? I mean, it's all about outcomes for the customer and being able to better understand what are those outcomes that they're trying to achieve and experience, and then how do we create, through technology and also even maybe in combination and working with interior design and architectural resources, that optimum work and learning space for our customer so that they're able to achieve that desired outcome. You know, we sell cool technology. We sell stuff that, you know, black boxes with blinking lights that and lots of cool stuff. And quite frankly, sometimes we're our biggest enemy in that we don't do a real good job sometimes of really drilling down and trying to identify and put the technology aside, if you will, and drilling down to customer need and customer requirement and customer expectation and what does success look like to them, and then really working with them and then designing a system that will achieve that desired outcome. Oftentimes we jump to the design, we jump to the technology, when really at the end of the day, that's just a means to an end. That's a portal that gets us there, but making sure we understand customer outcome and what they're trying to achieve, really, really pivotal.
Well, and doesn't that change the whole nature of business? I mean, at some point, business was, well, I suppose Wall Street has a lot to do with it. The public companies and the quarterly earnings, it has to do with what did we make last quarter? What's our margin last quarter? What was our sales revenue last quarter? We know the kind of craziness that happened in the internet bubble about, I mean, I was very aware of companies that were inflating their revenues by all sorts of machinations, but that's not the real issue for business, is it?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, thankfully, I guess, sometimes I wish we were a publicly held company because we might make choices, make some choices that are a bit different than the ones that we make. But I guess, thankfully, at the end of the day, we're not publicly traded. We certainly are as interested as anyone in terms of, you know, the financial performance of the company. And we're interested in our customers' financial performance and those outcomes as well. But at the end of the day, we try to differentiate ourselves by designing, building, supporting a better experience for our customers so that those communication objectives are met. And if we do a good job of that, I think at the end of the day, everything flows through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if a company is known for listening and understanding what the needs are, what the problems are that prospect or client wants to solve, and then goes about solving them, or making a decision that we can't, and let me refer you, introduce you to somebody who can. If a company gets that kind of reputation, it seems to me, now you tell me, it seems to me that they're going to get a lot of introductions from current clients to other
people. And I think it introduces, I mean, it differentiates us from maybe the other people that are going to walk in and meet with that customer as well too. The more thought-provoking, kind of headier questions that we're prepared to ask and present to the customer and to get them to think about things that maybe they have not thought about, that's going to differentiate us from the other people that are out peddling boxes of technology. There are a lot of people that can do what we do. I guess fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of folks in our industry, they're more technically proficient than they are sales proficient. And I'm a guy that was born and raised on Xerox PSS1 and Xerox PSS2 and spin selling and all about need satisfaction, uncovering, identifying need, and then making sure that we're presenting solutions that address the need. And there could be more of that in our industry for sure, because like I said, in general, our industry is a bit sales deficient.
Well, and that's, you know, that happens very often when people, even when they're focusing on services, they still sell it as if it were a package, a product.
Right.
And it's how do I ask questions so that you'll buy what I'm selling?
Right.
And that's all about me versus how do I understand what needs you have and how can I help you accomplish what you want to accomplish?
Yeah, and I think in the heat of the battle, you know, our folks are busy trying to, you know, get proposals out to customers, doing a lot of different things, but taking the time to really kind of drill down and understand customer outcome that they're trying to achieve is always going to be the best play. Kind of slow down to speed up, if you will, and it does clearly differentiate ourselves from the rest because most folks are not having those conversations. Fortunately or unfortunately.
Wouldn't it be much better if that's the kind of conversations we always had?
Absolutely. Absolutely. again, it's pretty simple for me. I mean, you know, the way I was taught in a, you know, going into a business meeting is that you built rapport, you did a headcount to make sure that everyone was there that needed to be there in order to make an investment decision, and you set an agenda, and you provided a general benefit statement, an introduction statement, and then you did a needs analysis, and then you presented your company, your solution based upon speaking to those needs, and you summarized benefits, and you asked for next steps and to move forward with the customer. I mean, it was a very kind of McDonald's-like methodical process that you went through whenever you engaged with a customer.
Right.
Today is a little bit less methodical. And I think today's world actually could benefit from more structure and more agenda, because I think at the end of the day, we would have better business meetings and better customer outcomes if we did so.
Yeah, absolutely. And focusing, understanding that we're focusing on what is it that you're struggling with, and tell me what, you know, what's causing it, so that we might look at how we could fix it, maybe.
Yep. Right? Absolutely.
Well, now when did you make this shift from boxes to meeting needs?
Well, I tried to, you know, I had originally tried in the mid-90s to be able to begin the progression from being an equipment provider to more of a solutions, you know, the designing, building, installing of AV systems into rooms. And I tried to do that on my own for a few years, and I found quite candidly that I was not a good referee. I really didn't know who was right or who was wrong. I brought in, you know, what I thought to be kind of engineers and technical talent to be able to help design these rooms and specify the technology that needed to go in these rooms. And then I had a sales organization and found that the two individuals, both technical and sales, were fighting. And I didn't know how to referee the fight. So that's why I was really kind of fortunate to go out and find Jay, my business partner today, bring him into the organization, because he knew the business and he knew how to referee the battle, if you will, and put the teams together to be able to kind of gel and work together to be able to help, you know, work with a customer. So, yeah, it was mid-90s, and it's interesting today. I mean, literally the transactional business today is virtually nil. We very rarely do we sell a box of technology that does not have some labor services associated with that box.
Right. And so was that difficult to make that shift?
Yeah, it was really, really hard. I mean, I remember people, other integrators, other dealer friends of mine from around the country that said, hey, Jeff, you need to be an integrator. You need to get more of your revenue from services and less from boxes. And but they said, you know, just know it's gonna be tough. I'll tell you what, it was a lot harder than they told me it was going to be. It was really hard. It was a transformation of the sales organization. It was a learning experience for me because I didn't really know it. Fortunately, again, I was able to bring in the talent and the resources that did know it, that helped kind of get us further down the path. But it was hard. And it still is today.
Oh, how did you affect the change in your organization?
Yeah, I think it was really about making sure everybody understood the, you know, the why fors and the how comes. I mean, the reasons why we needed to transition the organization and you know, making the connection between kind of the computer world and the audio video world. If you could kind of link the dots, it made it pretty clear that we're going to need to make that transformation. So I think the first part was really kind of selling the company on the reasons why this was pivotal and critical to the company's success and their success and them being able to provide for their families. And so everybody had a vested interest in it. And then a lot of training and education to be able to help them through the transition. That was critical as well too. So I think first of all was just selling them on why. And then the second piece was really about making sure they were trained and educated on how to be a solutions provider versus just a technology provider.
Now, how did you make the shift in your sales team? Did you have to replace salespeople? Were they willing to learn new ways?
Yeah, I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, some people were able to make the transition, and there was a lot of sales training and coaching. And also, too, they need to become more technically equipped and technically astute to understand, you know, the world of designing and building AV systems. And all the things that have to go in between a source and an output to be able to make those devices communicate with one another. So there was a great deal of not just sales training, but certainly a lot of technical training that had to be done, whether it was through our industry association or even through manufacturers that we were partnering with and building relationships with, to make sure that our people had the technical chops to be able to go out and have those conversations with customers. Because not all the time were we meeting with the people that were just the presenters or the users of those rooms. We were meeting with, you know, the audiovisual departments for enterprise accounts or the IT group or whatever, more technically astute people that wanted to talk to technology. So our people at least needed to be equipped to know enough about that to be able to go down that path with people that wanted to talk to them.
Right. Bits and bytes and speeds and feeds, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And at the same time, to be able to speak the language of the CFO, which is going to be, what's this going to impact our revenue? There's got to be chief training officers who are really looking for how do we deliver this. All of those people who have a vested interest in this problem that the company has.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge, and that's why, you know, to some degree, our sales team has to be technically astute, but also sales astute, because they need to be able to go in, if need be necessary, and talk about how I'm going to get this image to this display, mm-hmm. and make sure that the IT folks know about that and we can talk that talk. But you're right. I mean, the people that are the CEOs and the CFOs and the COOs and the VPs of sales and those folks that are going in and using those rooms, they're interested about increasing attention and retention and influencing their audience and persuading and directing behavior. They're interested in all the kind of the outcomes and the experiences and what it will allow them to do to be able to achieve, you know, better performance. So being able to have people that can talk technical and at the same time be able to be astute at being able to understand, you know, customer outcome in that language, that's not easily found.
No. Well, Jeff, this has been really interesting about how you began as primarily a box provider, and now the providing boxes is almost the afterthought about how to do it, because the real issue is it's not even services, it's solving problems.
Absolutely.
For varieties of levels of in any organization. So I want to take a little break here and hear from our sponsors and then come back, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about what issues you see going on today in the marketplace. Is that okay?
Sounds great.
So take a break from the Pilgrim on the 405, and we'll be back shortly.
We know you rely on your CRM system, and it's usually a love-hate relationship. Most CRM systems, well, let's face it, they're expensive. They're hard to understand. People don't use them properly. And you're probably paying for features that you don't even want. If that's your case, then maybe it's time to simplify. It's time to get more from your CRM. Why don't you go back to the original? Trust Goldmine. We helped pioneer the industry, after all. Goldmine CRM is, well, it's simple, it's affordable, and it's proven. If all those sound appealing to you, if you're just tired of the CRM headaches that you're getting from trying to implement something that's just too complicated, too expensive, and too much for you to figure out, then why not go back to the original? Visit Goldmine today, goldmine.com.
So welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405, where we have been interviewing Jeff Urban, the the founder and principal at Spinitar, and we've been reflecting on the change from the initial sale of boxes for video conferencing and what else, Jeff? You said also you sold a lot of display units, right? And moving from that to actually solving problems for enterprise level companies on how they're doing video conferencing, communicating, and training. So welcome back, Jeff. Tell me a little bit about issues that you have right now. If you looked at your people right now, what percentage would you say know where the company's going and how it's going to get there?
Well, at the end of the day, I mean, we're still in the people business. Even though we have, you know, done things to try to make our company easier to do business with for our people, try to simplify, you know, their experience in doing business with Spinitar so that ultimately rubs off on customer experience, you know, we're still in the people business. We're still, you know, wrestling with, you know, culture and making sure that, you know, we're able to retain talent. So those are things that are not unique to our business. Certainly, it's probably every business is out trying to do things that will improve their ability to be able to retain great people and attract great people. So I think, you know, that's an issue. I think one of the things that we try to do and I think is very unique to our company is we're very much a family feel. I mean, we're big enough to be, you know, substantial and a fairly substantial player in our industry, but we're also small enough to be able to retain more of a family feel to our organization. We're very celebratory. We celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. We celebrate exceptional performance with an annual incentive trip that we have every year, which is called Chairman's Club, to be able to acknowledge exceptional performance from our employees of the quarter, employees of the year, top sales performers, and such. We also are trying to be very communicative with our employees by sharing and having a monthly newsletter to let them know about all the goings on and the happenings in the organization. Quarterly, we have a breakfast all hands meeting to be able to also share and disseminate information within our organization. So we're very attentive to the people, and we're going to need to be continually attentive to our people because it's a very, very good economy right now. The talent search gets tougher and tougher. And also, companies are more aggressively outreaching to find individuals that they can pull into their organizations to help them grow. So retaining and attracting great talent, you know, key thing for us. The other thing that's happening in our industry is, and I guess it probably has to do with a robust economy, is there's a great deal of mergers and acquisitions going on in our industry presently. And the big are getting bigger. So we're kind of faced with what does that mean to us? You know, right now we're kind of a middle market sized player in our industry amongst kind of the top 50 integrators nationwide. But we keep asking ourselves, you know, how do we get bigger as an organization and how do we compete against the real big boys and girls in our industry? And what does that mean to us ultimately? So that's going to be a challenge. And then our value proposition. I mean, how do we continue to provide value to our customer? Because that's going to need to continually change and continually evolve. I think we need to continue to look for ways to be able to be a trusted advisor for our customer to create that stickiness with them.
Now, some of the things that I hear in talking to business owners and members of the leadership teams is there's a sense in which the business owns them, and they're working way harder than they want to work. Has that been an issue for you?
Well, I'm constantly engaged, and quite frankly, though, you know, to me, it may be a little bit of an addiction. And I guess with technology today, even when I'm out of the office, I'm still in the office. Even when I maybe take a few days off, I'm still not taking a few days off. So I think the good news, bad news with technology and mobility and all is that we're able to kind of stay glued in and dialed in no matter what. And I'm probably my biggest enemy. I mean, if there's not a problem, I'll call into the office to look for one, to try to find one. You know, I love to try to help solve problems. It's probably a bit of an addiction to me. But the interesting thing, Will, is even after 32 years, I love what I do. I mean, right. I still love right. what I do. And I remember a few years ago, we brought in someone to kind of run the day-to-day operation of the business and play president of the company. And I found myself looking for things to do and looking for ways to provide value. And I'll have to tell you, that was a very uncomfortable feeling because I almost felt like I wasn't needed anymore.
We all
need a purpose in life, right? We're all mired in the muck and the activity trap, and certainly I could do a better job of being more strategic and less tactical. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I like the thrill of the kill. I like the business. My day job is really business development and marketing. That's kind of what I'm involved in, is my day job in the organization, and I love that. I really do love that.
You guys have some, I noticed you have some things that you are working with social services. You have an outreach program, don't you? You're giving some money away, doing things?
Yeah, we do. One thing I'm very proud of is we have connected with the people at City of Hope, which is one of the leading cancer treatment and research facilities in the world. And we have an individual in our organization that has gone through some very, very serious cancer experiences. And as a result of that, we wanted to give back. We wanted to do some things that were a bit different than just, you know, selling and installing AV systems for our customers. And so we established what we called Golf for Hope. This will be our fourth year coming up on November 8th. Where we invite sponsors, our manufacturer sponsors that we work with, and then also invited guests for a day at the golf course to come out and raise money for the City of Hope and their efforts to fight cancer and other life-threatening disease. And I can tell you, Will, you know, the evening of that day where we have the awards banquet, and we have the silent auction and the live auction and all the fundraising that goes on, it's one of the proudest days that I have. I mean, I'm so proud of our company and what we're doing, and it's just a real, real neat feel good day that we're doing something that is, you know, good for others.
Well, it seems to me, at least growing up, I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. It was my great uncle who had this great vision of, he was a auto parts salesman. Went all around Texas. Now this was back in the 20s, and he would start in Houston and go all the way around by boat, by train, by whatever, selling auto parts. And eventually he came to the idea that he could move to South Texas and he could start an empire. So he built a warehouse called Grindle Sales, and then asked all of his brothers and his brothers-in-law to move to South Texas from Indiana and other parts in the country. And they came down, and he did. There was no franchising at that point, but he just said, "You get to have Valley Auto Parts in Edinburgh, and you get to have it in Brownsville, and you get to have it in Weslaco." He had 8 different stores.
Yeah,
built a whole empire. That was my experience of entrepreneurial life. And seeing that, I also saw that they were all very involved in the community.
I think that's critical. I mean, I think, you know, it can't be all about a monthly financial statement. And, you know, I think you want to go through life and be able to leave the world in a better place. And it's good to know that at the end of the day, you've done some things that are outside of just the day-to-day that might impact lives and help people. And it's been a great thing for us. It's such a fun event. It's such a neat experience for all of our people to be able to go out and participate in a greater good.
I think that's a wonderful thing, and it seems to me that business people know how to solve problems, and that is so important today. We have so many issues out there, and when business people take their skills and their heart and put it into solving those problems, so many of them get solved.
Right.
So commendations to you guys for doing that. Now, when you hit a ceiling, do you ever hit ceilings in your growth that you're not, something's got to change?
Yeah. You know, I think we've kind of hit that ceiling here as of late. We've hit a ceiling of about $50-51 million in revenues, and it seems to be kind of a hurdle that we can't seem to climb over, and I think both myself and my partner feel that it is important for us to be able to grow revenues and become a bigger player in this increasingly bigger pond, to be able to be competitive and to be able to leverage resources to invest in new services and technologies and all that we can provide that will differentiate us and provide greater value to the customer. So it's not just getting bigger because, you're supposed to get bigger. It's really about being able to get bigger to reinvest and be able to kind of keep up with the bigger boys and girls in this industry. But I feel like we've peaked a little bit, and we're now really trying to go through some strategic conversations to go back and revisit mission, vision, values, and then readdress strategy based upon some of the tactical things that we're going to need to do to be able to exponentially grow this organization. And that could be through acquisitions. It could be merging. It could be through opening up offices in new markets. I mean, we feel like we've got kind of a repetitive model that can be duplicated over and over and over again. So going to other markets might be appropriate. There are other baby boomers in our industry that are looking for a liquidity event. Maybe going out and acquiring some smaller players in other markets where we could leverage our know-how of how to deploy and go to market. So there's a lot of options there, and we're right now, it's interesting that you asked, going through those strategic conversations to figure out how we really grow this organization in this growing business.
Now, you've gone through these hitting the ceiling experiences before.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we were stuck around probably 30 to 35 million for years and years and years. And all of a sudden in 2016, we had a huge pop of business. We grew about 76% top line revenues and had an EBITDA that was very, very solid. The interesting thing is last year in 2017, on the heels of an exceptional year, we really had a belly flop year. We performed poorly. It was kind of a hangover, if you will, from an exceptional year of growth and performance. And we really spent kind of the first part of 2017 cleaning up some of the mess that we had created through all of the growth in 2016. So it was a little bit of a peak and valley. Good news is 2018 is very strong. We're certainly headed in the right direction, and performance is way up.
Good. Well, and there's a tendency that people have when they hit that ceiling to try quick fixes.
Right.
How's that worked for you?
Well, I don't think there is any quick fix. And I think it's what we're trying to do now is kind of, take pause, get out of the activity trap, step outside of the box and look back in the box and assess what's going well and how do we exploit those things, what's not going well and what adjustments and tweaks we need to make. So having, you know, this strategic planning conversation that we're in the midst of, and then obviously on the heels of that will be a tactical response to the strategic plan. And then we go back into the box and perform.
Yeah.
But I think pausing every once in a while to step out of the box, look back in and assess performance is so critical, but it's so hard to do, Will, because when you're involved in the day-to-day battle, it's tough to say, hey, time out. Everybody put down their weapons. Let's assess what's going on before we pick up the weapon again and continue the battle. And it's tough to do because when you're in the heat of the battle, you want to just stay in the game. So
how are you doing that? What are you doing to make that happen?
Well, I mean, like I said, right now we're going through, our leadership team is going through a strategic planning conversation to try to kind of assess where we are now and what changes we need to make in terms of, you know, mission, vision, values, and then understand and all get aligned in terms of what the goal is. I mean, you know, if the goal is in the next, you know, 3 years, we want to progress from being a $50 million company to a $100 million company, we all need to kind of hold hands and agree that that's what we want to do and that's where we want to be, and then understand and identify what are the big rocks, the big things that we can do, what's the 20% of the stuff that are the things that we can do that are going to represent 80% of the impact towards achieving those objectives. So again, it's really taking some time out and making sure that we're aligned, we understand what the goal line looks like, and then we're doing all the things that can be most impactful to get us there.
You're using a lot of language that sounds very familiar to me. You're not working with an EOS implementer, are you?
No, we're not. I think we understand what it is that we need to do, but I think again, we're a victim of being much more tactical than we have been strategic in the past. We've had strategic planning sessions in the past or whatever, so we kind of understand the process that we need to go through.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we need to kind of take a page out of the McDonald's playbook a little bit and really identify the processes and how we can kind of lean out some of the waste within our organization, some of the duplication, some of the redundancy. We have to figure out how we can be much more efficient as an organization in terms of how we sell, how we deploy, how we service and support our customer. Because business is going to get tougher. It never gets any easier. And the world keeps spinning. So, you know, it's tough to kind of push the stop button, stop the world from spinning, take a step outside, look in, assess, you know, retool, and then press the go button and allow the world to continue to spin. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, if you believed that the better that businesses run across the board, the better that businesses run, the better our culture works. If you believe that was true, what would you say to business owners about how to make it better?
Well, I think culture is key. Now, there are a lot of organizations out there that are, you know, a lot of companies in our industry that have, you know, private equity money from behind them, and they are much more managed with your heads versus your hearts. But I would say that while that is certainly an appropriate practice, the heart still needs to be involved. And I think at the end of the day, the stronger the culture, the better the culture, the stronger the engagement that we have from our employees. And that's one thing we do is we assess employee engagement every year. We have our people, all of our people, take an employee engagement survey so that we can assess our levels of engagement with other industry association members so that we can kind of benchmark how we're doing as an organization from an engagement standpoint. And I would argue, again, the better culture, the better engagement, the better customer experience.
Good words. Good words. What would a company be feeling before they called you up? What, you know, wanted to engage with Spinitar? What kinds of issues would they have that they would find that Spinitar could help them solve?
You know, I think that audio video technology, I mean, you probably find this at home, sometimes getting the TV to work and the remote to function properly and that kind of thing. AV in and of itself is a standardless industry. We don't have a lot of standards in our industry. Unlike IT, that is very standards-based, AV is an industry that is ripe with pitfalls from the lack of standards. So ultimately, AV doesn't work. So oftentimes, people come to us because their AV doesn't work. Also, ultimately, sometimes companies come to us because they have maybe integrated technology in the past, but it's not achieving the desired outcome. They're not getting the performance that they would like to see. The people within their organizations, the stakeholders really maybe don't know how to use the technology properly and effectively. The interesting thing is AV used to be kind of an afterthought. We were always kind of the last guys in, especially if it was a company moving to a new facility. They would think about IT, they would think about security, they would think about furniture, and then, oops, we forgot AV. Now we're not as much of an afterthought. I think our industry has really kind of come of age, and our customers now realize the importance of them being able to better share and disseminate information to their internal customer, their strategic customer, and their external end user customer. And they understand that the better communicators they are, the better they're going to perform, whether they're a government institution, whether they're a corporate enterprise business, whether they're a college or university, or they understand the importance of being able to share and disseminate information. We become more vital to our customer today. And I think it's really more about them. Clearly, there's more of an understanding of the need today than there was in the past.
Good. Well, I think that the approach that you're taking, that one of looking to solve problems, that's not going to fail.
We hope not.
No, it's not. And there's no hope. We abandon hope. When we
yeah, absolutely.
We know what we're doing or we don't. If we don't,
absolutely. Yeah. Hope is not a good strategy.
That's right. Hope is not a good strategy. So thank you so much, Jeff, for taking your time out of your vacation there in Oregon. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, Will.
This has been the Pilgrim on the 405, sharing with you some of the folks who are very successful in California and looking to help companies in California help businesses thrive. So look forward to being with you again next week on the Pilgrim on the 405.
You've been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.